Welcome to the NCO Journal Podcast. This is a podcast series where we discuss published articles with authors and provide a forum for the open exchange of ideas, information, and solutions. I'm your host, Staff Sergeant Brandon Cox, NCOIC of the NCO Journal, and Chago Zapata, the managing editor. Today we discuss the article, Soldiers Take Ownership in Summits Aimed at Solution-Based Outcomes, by Command Sergeant Major Alex Caprotti, the 4th Infantry Division in Fort Carson, Command Sergeant Major. Sergeant Major, could you please start off by telling us a bit about yourself?
Hey, thank you. I appreciate for the invite and really reattacking on such an important topic. My name is Alex Caprotti, and I am the 4th Infantry Division in Fort Carson, CSM. Been here first time serving in Fort Carson, and I've been here now 22 months. Spent the majority of my career, out of the 28 years, 20 of those with the 75th Ranger Regiment, before moving on to Alaska and being an Airborne Brigade CSM up in Jaber. That brought me to where I am right now, being 87 and fortunate enough to be part of the Ivy Division.
Tell us, what gave you the inspiration to write this article?
It really is, the last time we spoke, we talked about this initiative that we're doing, the Solution Summit. We had planned it already, but it was in its infancy. We're trying to figure out how it was going to develop, how it was going to, a lot of people say, hey, you're just doing nothing more than a sensing session. So the article was really a means to explain all the goodness that came out of it, all the solutions that were created by our junior soldiers, identifying things and really reinforcing the fact that we don't have all the answers, that no matter how close we think we are to the problem, we couldn't be more farther away. And by the way, it's some of the solutions that we're able to see from our junior soldiers are really astounding. They're great. They're phenomenal. So I wanted to take the opportunity to highlight that. I'm not saying it's a solution for every division, but I think it's worked out very well for us here at 4th ID.
So you talk about how they're not just a sensing session. You've implemented this new program because this Solution Summit is to get after some of those issues that some of the soldiers have in your division. Why did you think that implementing this program was necessary to 4th ID?
There were several reasons. First and foremost, the most important thing is when we talk about professional development, we here in the Ivy Division approach professional development through our an ARC model. And our first ARC talks about culture. I think culture is really the foundation of everything you do. And as a leader, responsibility to build a good culture inside your formation so soldiers can thrive and feel like they're cared for and that they have the ability to both personally and professionally grow. Part of that is feeling like you are part of the team, you're part of a cohesive unit, that you are value added and you have a seat at the table, regardless of ranking or position. Your ideas matter. And we've known this for a long time, right? This is not nothing that we've just invented. But what I wanted to do is put them in the hot seat and allow them to see that the solutions that they either created were ones that could be implemented on the short, medium, or long term, and then have that immediate gratification, that rapid feedback, because that is single-handedly one of the biggest things we've seen. Now, as we run solution summits from E1, 3, 4, E5s, and E6s, the feedback we get is like, we didn't solve everything we identified here. We solved some of these things, and you guys are leaning forward and hopefully solving this in the near future. But it's really refreshing to see that somebody's actually listening. And that is arguably the biggest difference between a sensing session. You guys have grown up doing them. I don't know how many I've sat on. You go sit in here, you have a high DV that walks in and you're like, hey, he's just making his rounds. He or she's making his rounds. We're going to talk about all the things that are wrong. And 30 minutes later, maybe an hour, we'll leave and never to be heard from again. So it was important to me to create a feedback mechanism to show the soldiers that their feedback matters to us.
I had, as I read this, Sergeant Major, I had some questions come up. This was your first one, correct?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we E134s.
Yeah. So okay. So what did this look like? How many young? I think it was. You said E134s. How many were there? Did they break away into small groups? Did they each kind of come up with their own idea, and then you brought them? I'm not sure. There was some things some questions that came up, and I think this is a freaking amazing idea. I think this is something that should be incorporated by everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, first we set conditions to ensure we kind of brought them all in, relaxed. We did PT in the morning. We brought them all in. You know, we broke them down into groups first thing in the morning because it was a quick huddle as we get ready for the flag and saluting the flag while we're there, the purpose of the day, the good things that I'm hoping to achieve with their feedback. We broke them down to groups. We had 49 total participants, and that's from across the Ivy Division in Fort Carson. And really, we ended up breaking them down into five different groups. And they broke down, conducted PT, start building those teams through hardship there. And then eventually when we brought them back, we approached a problem set. There's certain things that I do want to understand, so I'll be clear on that. Going into the solution summits, there are things that I know are wrong with our division, and I want their feedback very specifically on those topics. And I'll highlight those later on. But then I asked them, tell me what it is that is keeping you from being the best soldier you can be, whether that's a quality of life issue, whether it's a work, professional, personal issue, right? And that can encompass anything inside isolation, from your teams down to whether you perceive this is a problem that's at the battalion, brigade level. So I opened up and really created the ecosystem for them to feel relaxed through just really conversation, talking a little bit about my history, how I grew up, how important it was to me to be able to provide that feedback. And I was fortunate enough to have leaders that were interested in the feedback. And this is a reason you'd be surprised. They were very talkative. They were not as gun-shy as I thought they would be, very quick to provide the feedback that I was looking for. As far as the solutions and issues, so we use QR codes quite a bit in the 4th Infantry Division to try to understand, you know, where we're doing, and that is from how our facilities are functioning. They're being responsive, you know, whether it's SRP, whether it's ACS, a ready company, in which that's where we bring our brand new soldiers through. And these surveys are geared towards different echelons. So we were able to aggregate data over time to highlight some of the things that we have seen through the ranks of our concerns, you know, and I'll highlight a few. These are some of the ones that they came, you know, they were like, hey, we're concerned with communication or lack thereof, concerned about task management or being overburdened with tasks, the predictability. Unit training management, or really, you know, training management really large. And then obviously from the quality of life perspective, barracks and transportation around post. So those are the things that they prioritize we're going to discuss. And once we highlighted that, broke them back into their five groups, assigned a leader, and then really provided the time and space for them to break into groups in what we call our Hurricane Forest room. It's a large room. They all had their own blackboard, their own whiteboards. And then for, you know, just over 2 hours, they sat and iterated through the different problems as to how they saw it. And they were able to highlight some of the issues. The biggest thing, you know, going into this problem solving is, I know their problems. I understand that. I need you to tell me how you're going to fix it. Who do you think, you know, would pin this responsibility in? Is it a company battery troop issue? Is it a division issue, or is it an Army issue? Is it something that we, the commander and I, need to push up? So kind of creating that structure for them, making them understand their purpose, the reason why they're there, and the necessity for me to understand how they want to solve it, I think went a long way. So them actually saying, okay, I think we're in a safe space. Let's start getting after some work.
Yeah. So, I mean, you go into the summit, you have an idea or a topic, and maybe ask them a question. And I see that you use some analytics to get some of this data to kind of find common issues. What did some of that data entail?
Yeah, so we exercised our horses really well. I will give you, well, I highlight some of the the data that we're able to pull through a lot of these surveys. You know, and biggest concern is for us, wasn't like an up tempo predictability thing. We were able to see that different units communicated very differently. Different echelons understood the priorities in the division per se, different way, different initiatives that were executing at the division, and really the installation level were not getting to the people. So as we go and do and check on learning, because that feedback loop, the feedback mechanism really is really important to us, we're realizing, I was like, hey, we're missing the mark here. The horses were able to highlight that through, you know, numerous surveys. Okay, where is the message being? Where is it dying? Where is it breaking? That is one of the ways that we looked at for that. Now we're doing a little bit different now, coming in with E5s and E6s and E7s. But as an example, that was one of them. I wanted to go back real quick when you were asking about the structure, how we created this. Framing the problem from them is not a thing that comes naturally to a junior soldier. So spending the time with them, it goes through, you know, the article talks about empowering soldiers. You empower through knowledge, people who are knowledgeable, are confident, and they understand what their job and their expectation is. So they're better able to become more lethal soldiers at the end of the day. So, you know, teaching these young soldiers how to frame a problem, which then turn into developing the solutions. And ultimately, you know, communication is being one of the biggest things in the Army. I always tell them, I said, the higher you go in the ranks, you're going to have to be able to communicate and advocate for your people, advocate for your formations. Your inability to do that, you know, can come at a cost. And that's how they finish up. Every solution summit finishes up with a leader of that group coming up to brief me, tell me, Sergeant Major, this is a problem. This is what we think the solution is collectively. And, you know, and he has his group right there huddled around him to provide reinforcing fires to kind of continue to build those cohesive teams. And I think it's been very beneficial.
I think that's a difference between, what, like you said, the sensing session and this solution summit too, that you've given them an opportunity and use the words critical thinking. You know, these young NCOs or young soldiers, it's easy for them to say, well, you know, this or that is, you know, sucks or whatever. They can complain. And you know, like we all did back when we were junior in the service. But this is an opportunity, I think, where you're saying, they might say, well, they don't serve steak enough times in, you know, a month at the DFAC. For example. So now that's a problem. Now, okay, what would you do? Well, this is, they get to learn that there's certain limitations to things, and there's, the solution isn't always as simple as just, you know, hey, the boss said, get it done. So we get it done. They get to understand and do some critical thinking and look behind the curtain, so to speak, to see that the problems that they have may not be as simple, and then offering them an opportunity to think through it and then give you potential solutions, I think, is an amazing opportunity for them. So,
absolutely. Yeah, no, I think you're spot on. You know, I think, you know, some people are like, are we pushing these soldiers a little bit too hard to solve problems that they're not potentially prepared to do? I'm like, no, it's, you know, I always, when we tackle problem solving, you know, that's the philosophy of it is, you know, there's four types of soldiers in our formation. You know, we always say that when I talk to these, the NCOs, you know, the ones that cause problems, the ones who are just limited to identify problems, and those, then the ones that can identify and both solve problems, that's typically what we want our people to be. And with the pinnacle and, you know, the sweet spot being the ones who can prevent problems. And that's just graduate level things. I think if we start them up this early, I think we set conditions for them to actually get a step up on as they continue to progress among the ranks.
Oh, absolutely, Sergeant Major. I mean, you're giving these young soldiers a voice, and that's all soldiers want sometimes. You know, they have all these issues going on, or they think they have a lot of issues going on. Maybe it's just they just don't understand and nobody will listen and they feel like nobody listens. And then the division command sergeant major calls 50 of them in to tell him, you know, what they think. I think that's powerful.
Thank you. Thank you.
I did want to touch on something you talked about. Some of the analytics talked about, you know, op tempo, predictability of like work-life balance, schedules, things like that. Did the soldiers share the same importance for that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So you talked about, you know, just a little while ago, you mentioned, you know, I'm giving them a voice and giving them the opportunity to hear from me, become educated, understand some of the things that are happening. And so that's when you talk about op tempo and predictability and unit training management, that was, and, you know, if we have this conversation like a month or two from now, be interesting to see, because we're seeing, I've seen the exact same thing with E5s and E6s. And here in a couple of days, actually tomorrow, I bring E7s into the fold. But the boss and I have sat with majors who echo almost the exact same things. So it's really interesting to see how they layer and they overlap. But yeah, they share the same issues, you know, the communication, task saturation, task management, lack of predictability is something that they feel strongly. Because as you know, everything rolls downhill and the soldier's the one that always picks up the slack. So two things. It highlighted certain things that we as an organization may be missing, right? You know, when you look at a formation that's 17,000 strong, you can only move to so many places at one time. Even if we exercise our DCGS, our chief of staff, you know, you're just not always going to hit every single one. So you assume and you entrust and empower your leaders to do the right things. But then you have soldiers that come in. And I'll give you a perfect example. You know, when we talk about training management and what they understand to be training management, right? Some of them knowing what's happening just days. With certainty, I understand what we're doing the next 48 hours. You know, some other soldiers will say, hey, I know about a week out, you know, with the most being 2 weeks out. You can argue, do soldiers need to know 6 weeks out? Do they even care that much? We can say, hey, that's a complete different conversation. But how much the different units across the division spend time creating the predictability through training schedules and having those conversations to the complementary troop differed. That's not something new. That's, I mean, I've been in different units who do things well and some not so well, and some are working and improving. But sitting down and talking to them about what exactly up-tempo is, predictability, the importance of training management, the importance of having those conversations every single day, you know, during the morning formations, things that they're just not aware, they don't understand, or just not being practiced was really, really eye-opening for us. Created different solutions that we're exercising now. As a matter of fact, and we'll get into one of them when it comes to communications and formations a little later on. But to answer your questions, yes. These are things that we knew were issues, and they were really they backed all our concerns up by sharing some of the stories and of what they do in their formations.
Did you hear any interesting or creative solutions from the soldiers to try and help fix or optimize this problem?
Yeah. You know, we talked about communication, right? The training management piece, we can, you know, it's what they propose were things that if you were to pick up training management and you pick up the FM and it's like spelled out right for you. Hey, this is how you're supposed to do this. This is how you communicate. This is where you post it. This is the amount of effort that goes into, you know, certifying leaders in preparation for your training. They highlighted a lot of those things. We're like, hey, like, you know, for once, I'd love to see with consistency, you know, what I'm doing, and not like a macro calendar. I would love to see the detail. And unfortunately, you know, you and I grew up in that era where like, Caprotti, we're shooting today. Be here at this time with your weapon and your body armor. That's it, right?
Yep.
There was not, we're going to focus, we're going to focus in CQB tables, which is going to build into single team, single room, battle duel six. There was not that level of detail. So them wanting to know that, you know, really is it's important because a lot of our leaders, they triage information and they think, hey, this privates just need to know this, be here at this time. And the generations that we have now entering the Army, they're more inquisitive. They want to know things. They want to know why. They want to understand. You know, and I keep telling them, informed soldiers are better soldiers. They're more lethal soldiers. So the solutions were online with what doctrine is actually telling our leaders to do. So that was no surprise. A big surprise that came out of some of the solutions they proposed to some of the issues, in particular communication, is, you know, you and I believe that technology, you know, is really what defines the generation where we have right now. You know, we call them digital natives, and they prefer to communicate through digital means. So we thought, but you'd be surprised of how much face-to-face time a lot of our soldiers crave for many reasons. You know, the ability to ask questions, the ability to say, well, why are we doing it? Okay, hey, I just want to make sure I understand this. Things that just get lost when you start establishing, you know, signal comms or iMessager comms or whatever messaging app you're using. We've actually brought leaders in to let them know and start talking about, hey, how do we communicate in your formations? How many formations do we run? What is it that we cover? Do you know that your soldiers would prefer to have, you know, more than one formation a day? How do they know that they're doing the right things? You know, how do we set conditions to release people at the end of the day? So the communications piece and how they prefer to receive it was eye-opening for me because, you know, having kids, my kids would prefer to talk. I mean, I'm like two rooms down in the house and they'll send me a text and I'm like, hey, just come to the room. What is it you want? But that is not the case. Our soldiers want the leader's presence. They want the leaders talking to them face to face. They want to have the ability to have those conversations. So that was in a positive way and also surprising for me.
That is surprising for me as well. I would imagine because I'm the same way. My daughter will send me a text before she talks to me. She doesn't take her face away from her eyes off the phone. So that's surprising, but in a pleasant way. I imagine, I mean, for me growing up in the service, I would say that is the only way that we received our communications back in the day, you know, and it's surprising that that's what they prefer, but gratifying too, because they understand that that's the best way to communicate.
No, absolutely. And you know, the two big things that came out of that, you know, their lack of predictability, being the first one, having leaders calling them, you know, late in the evening, or sometimes having leaders calling on a Saturday and a Sunday to change timelines, you know, for Monday morning. It becomes wearing on somebody, you know, especially when you come in and you're giving it your all from Monday to Friday. And then we understand this is a profession of arms. We've all been in the Army long enough. But, you know, it's good training management can prevent, not all, because, you know, it is Army. You're still going to have to react to contact every now and then. But it should not be the norm because we're incapable of creating a good plan. Now we're reaching out to soldiers at 19, 2000 after they're home with their families or in their barracks, just, you know, relaxing or worst cases on the weekends. One of the byproducts of this issue with the lack of predictability was the creation of Policy Letter 11. And the CG created this policy letter, and it's not new in the Army. I think 10th Mountain did it probably 5-6 years ago, which really talked about the importance of training management, not to be confused with, hey, leaders, don't call your soldiers, because everybody gravitates to that. It was not. It was to reinforce a culture of good, you know, unit training management, because if we're doing that right, in reality, we shouldn't be reaching out to our soldiers in the middle of the night or in the weekends to correct something that we failed to capture to begin with, right?
Yeah. That was, I'm sorry. I believe that was Sergeant Major Terranus, because I was at Drum when he put that into effect. And it was essentially to tell everyone in the division, you are not allowed to contact your soldier past duty day.
That's right. You're right. Absolutely. The one thing that the you know, commanding general did is he's added a punitive paragraph to it, and I'm not saying that in a threatening way, but there has to be what is the backstop if we have leaders continuously doing this after a policy has been established, you know. How do we reinforce it? So that's the only difference between ours and you know, when Tasman created theirs. Now, truth be told, once we released this policy letter, things were going well. And we got the feedback from E1, 3, 4, E5, all the way down to majors. Now we're starting to see, you know, as time passes, we need to readdress the importance of policy letter 11, because they're like, hey, you know, we're going back to getting calls later tonight. But that's what happens with a new thing, right? You constantly have to go back to it, reinforce it through conversations, bring it up through LPDs, bring it through about the importance of why it is that we're doing that. Because sometimes the message gets lost. Perfect example, you know, I was briefing a group of senior NCOs in Poland a couple of weeks ago, talking about policy letter 11. And they're like, oh, that's such a, nobody calls anybody in the weekends. So I was like, well, no. Yes. In the simplest forms, that's exactly what it is. But what we want to do is we want to change the way you approach training, you know, because that's all tied. And unit training management is tied to the predictability or lack thereof. So, we continue to iterate. So that was one. That was one of the biggest things that they were concerned about. Communications piece. So we just started piloting formations, right? We asked the division, how many formations do you have a day? You have your the most sacred formation of all, right? It's your PT formation. That's when you bring your people in, you put your hands, there they are. Everything's great. We're ready to train. You cover some of the things that we may be doing that day, and we do some hard PT, right? Become more deadly. Best case scenario, you might have a close-off formation while you wait on the word. And definitely you're in the weak formation. So the CG and I looked at this and got some of the feedback from our brigade command teams. And right now we're piloting across the division. One battalion per brigade is piloting the four formations a day. And this is all also tied, because what we're trying to do is aggregate some of these solutions. This is tied to communication and predictability. PT formations followed by a 9 o'clock formation. Things that you and I have done, where we describe what activities are going to happen in the week, what are the goals, you know, then you get an ASM to check in the middle of the day to see if we're on track, and then you close that formation. And that was because, you know, our people are saying, we need more face-to-face. We need to understand what it is that we're doing, and other than just getting some quick 3 Ws in 0630, and then we're just going to sit around. So we're looking to see how this develops here over the rest this first quarter. We're trying to use our ORSAs to try to see through data if we can see if some of these formations, you know, have improved across the board when it comes to communications. They become more efficient with their times. So more to follow on that.
I'm curious how the how the summits are going to look for the senior ranks. Are you making changes to the format? What kind of things are you doing different than what you did for the E134 summit?
Well, yes. So we had a breakfast a couple of days ago with the strong first classes. So that will be tomorrow. Given the weather, works for us. This is great weather. It's, you know, when we started this, I mentioned that there are some things that I target already. So I know going in, there are things that I want their feedback on. And then I open it up for them to describe some of the concerns that they have. I expect a little more from my senior NCOs. And really, I'll tell you for this one, particularly tomorrow, as we had breakfast a couple of days ago with them, I focus in leader professional development, and I think the Army does really well at the team leader, squad leader courses. Every formation should have some form of company commander first sergeant courses, you know, directed. And you know, you have your S3 XO ops sergeant major courses. But when we look at that mid-level leadership, which is our platoon sergeants, you know, the most senior soldier in that platoon, outside of SLC, we don't have anything. So our focus tomorrow is going to be to discuss and develop the POI, how we target the development of our sergeant first classes. especially when you look at formations, and it varies across the Army, you know, anywhere between 10-15% of your platoon sergeants are E6s. And that's just the nature of the beast. You know, people fleet up, you have gains, losses. So we're at times pushing some of these young staff sergeants to fill responsibilities that they may not always be necessarily ready to do. So that is one of the goals. We have a survey out. We aggregate these surveys the morning of when they come in. They're able to think. So they get about 2 to 3 days to think through some of the solutions or some of the problems that they're going to bring up. So when they come in tomorrow morning, they'll highlight, hey, this is what we're going to target. And we'll aggregate it there and there. We'll identify, hey, let's chase these. We'll break them into groups and begin framing issues. But the biggest difference for this one coming up tomorrow is the fact that I'm asking them to develop something for the first time that is going to be codified across really Fort Carson writ large.
Okay, backtracking a little bit, Sergeant Major. What about the E5 and E6s? You said that communication was one of the things that came up for the E134 summit. So what about the E5s and E6s? What kind of priorities did they have? What was it a lot different than what the young troops were thinking, or was it pretty much the same? What were the differences?
No, they were pretty much the same, and they were pretty much the same when we brought company commanders, first sergeants, and majors as well. There were a couple things that that they highlight as concerns. And the thing about the solution summit is, it's a way to share information, much like you said. Hey, now you're getting directly from the division CSM. A lot of the problems, not said a lot, but some of these problems that our formations see. It's just like a communication, because sometimes they're not problems. There are things that have either been solved, maybe not action at their level, and they don't see it because it hasn't been communicated very well, or they're long-term problems. But really, communication and predictability were always the biggest concerns. Our E5s and E6s concerns. Talked about barracks, our barracks and the modernization of barracks. Obviously, the Army is undergoing its modernization processes. Don't ask me to tell you the amount of money right now that they're spending. But when you look at Carson, in the barracks that we have now, utilization rates are pretty low. They don't understand. They don't understand that. So understanding how, making them understand how the processes work, how the Army prioritizes the refurbishment of barracks, and really what is available inside the formation, what's available inside of Carson that they can use, their barracks managers, their facility managers, RNU, things that they can do at their level. It's always, it comes back to just lack of information, lack of knowledge. So we take the time, and at times we've had guest speakers that come in. We're bringing the garrison CSM to talk about some of those issues. But yeah, the only difference is with them where, you know, dealt with barracks, transportation, and then finance issues, all really ACS services that really highlights maybe we're not targeting, maybe we're not teaching them enough. Maybe we're just expecting them to be the problem solvers for all these without showing them the resources that are available for them that they can use to help their soldiers. So with the E5s and the E6s, it became more systems and processes and then the understanding or lack of understanding of them.
So I know you already mentioned this, but you know, you kind of established the importance of short, mid, long-term goals throughout all of your solution summits so far and going forward. So you can kind of prioritize quick wins. I was wondering, what are some of the quick wins that the 4th ID's already implemented?
Oh gosh, we talked about policy letter 11. That was quick. We brought in all the senior leaders and read the importance of respecting our soldiers' time, you know, and putting a little more effort in their training management and practices. 24-hour gyms. That's when I first got here. You know, I think I've been just every installation I've been has some form of 24-hour gym. When I came in as a brand new division CSM, you know, the actual feedback was that we didn't need any, we didn't need a 24-hour gym. Nobody was interested on it. But, you know, then you bring E1, 3, 4, Z5. So like, absolutely, we want a 24-hour gym. So within 72 hours, we had a 24-hour gym. And it was just a matter of just moving resources to make that happen. Back to the little things, you know, you asked you earlier, what are some of the things that surprise you? And they are those small things, you know, certain formations, closing off certain roads or gates to maintain their formations intact, post 0630 formation. Well, that affects other units who live in the same footprint, and their inability to kind of move and drive to their locations. It's, you know, and if you've been in Carson, there's just units, you know, both in north and south end of the post. So all these different things were super quick, and bringing them back, asking them how they wanted to hear what things were actioning, where they were in the priorities for the division, was really the biggest win. Because the first ones are like, hey, we want to come back here and we want you to tell us exactly what you've done to this point, you know? And so I was like, hey, that's perfect. Hold me accountable. You know, we did it 30 days later. We brought them all in. We had taken all their solutions and put them in those, you know, quick win buckets, short-term, mid-term solutions, long-term. And then through, you know, through spending time, you know, and looking into some of their perceived problems, then some of those are just not obtainable. And we were able to articulate that. And like, hey, I know you believe this is a problem, but this is why this is not a problem, right? And they were very respectful of that. They were very understanding. As a matter of fact, the feedback that we receive, because Ms. Brandt runs, you know, the survey afterwards, they're like, you know, it's great to see that at least they're honest with the things that they are doing and what they're not willing to do and why. But yeah, to your original questions, those three are the big ones that reverberated throughout the formation, the policy, gems, and adjusting different security measures around that kept people from moving freely during a duty day.
I think you said something there that struck me a little bit, and it was accountability. I think that leaders holding themselves accountable to kind of provide that help with the solutions and then provide the answer on the back end is like the most important piece of this. I mean, in your article, you mentioned that communicating the progress of a solution, regardless of the outcome, is the most important part. Can you talk about that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, feedback mechanisms are really what will incentivize future generations of soldiers or future generations of IB soldiers from having these conversations. Because the goal is not just to get through all these ranks and call it done. Our plan is to re-hit this next year and start over again with a new set. So the ability for them to walk out and say, you know, this was value added, right? The ability for them to walk out and say, we got this accomplished. You know, as minuscule as that may be to you as a sergeant first class or a sergeant major or a colonel, it means a lot, right? It meant a lot to them. So for them to walk out of there understanding that the division is actually taking the time to action or tell them why we're not action is very important, because that information is gonna get down to the masses and hopefully will incentivize more people who are invested and are eager to come and say, hey, Fourth ID, this is wrong. How about you fix it? Here's the way that I would go at it. So the feedback loop is extremely important. I think we would fail if we didn't have that implemented in this process. Again, we're back to sensing sessions.
I've got something that I wanted to ask about, Sergeant Major. Is this something that units can implement at a more lower level? You know, is this something that maybe, say, somebody at a company level or you know, something like that they can actually incorporate your idea here at a tighter setting, I guess you could say? Would you recommend that they do something like this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is easy, but scalable. You know what? One of the things that we do, we talked about short-term, long-term, and mid-term goals, and you know, unattainable goals. Some of these solutions also fall under the Cubri battery tube level, and so our goal was not to be a division that just, you know, comes flying in with a red cape, and we're solving everything. You know, we're the heroes of the battle. We're powering down some of these solutions down to the company battery troop level, battalion level. And we tell them, I was like, hey, this is assistance and processes that quite honestly should be handled at your level. Here it is. I'm teeing this up. I'm pitching you a softball. Just grab it, take it, and go with it, right? And that should be kind of be the precursor for them to see, man, had we done this, had we maybe taken the time to ask this, maybe we could identify this and get us solving the problem before it actually bubbles up to a division level, battalion, brigade, you know? So, yes, I think it could be, it is scalable. And I think it could potentially solve a lot of the, you know, the problems that they're bringing up when they come on CS.
So our major is kind of a ending to this. I was just wondering, you know, you've been in the Army for quite some time. When you joined, was it this way? Did you know leaders that were open and to communication and ideas from a junior soldier, you know, like yourself at the time? Did you feel heard? Things like that?
No, not much. But he, you know, the Army's changes over time. The Army continues to get better. Leaders have continued. I had some, doesn't take away from the leadership that that made me the soldier that I am today. I'm very fortunate. I've had some phenomenal leaders. But that was not what the Army was. It's, you know, this is what we're doing. This is a mission. Go execute. You didn't ask questions. You trust your leaders to have all the answers to set the conditions for you to be successful. And you were just there at the right place, right time, right uniform, ready to go. So I did not... I wouldn't say because they lacked the value. They were just efficient. They tried to do things the way they knew how, and typically that didn't involve receiving feedback. But you know, generations have changed. And I told you this. You know, everybody asked, "Well, what do you see the difference between the generation now and you came in?" And I was like, "No." I mean, every generation brings its own set of challenges and opportunities. And you just have to be a flexible leader and adjust to that. Or else you're going to fail. That's just the bottom line. There's no room in the Army for this, you know, archaic way of thinking. And again, you know, back to the article, I think it's awesome. Sometimes I look at it and I'm like, I don't think I would have thought of that. And I see it through all the ranks. You know, I constantly see team leaders or squad leaders and live fighters, and I'm like, man, was I ever that good? And I'm like, no, I was not. So, we were not given the opportunity to do that. But now, I think we're doing the right thing. I think it's shown that it's proven to work from the feedback we've received, from all the soldiers and NCOs that have participated so far. So we hope to continue doing it and morphing along the way, focusing on bigger problems, and then maybe at times punt some of these issues down, you know, to higher echelons.
Remember to put your knowledge to the page, submit articles, and get published with the NCO Journal. Don't forget to check our webpage and follow us on social media. We'll catch you next time on the NCO Journal podcast.